Jiu-jitsu? Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to Philosophy.
What up, guys? Philosophy, Iki here. Unfortunately, our main co-host, John Jitsu, cannot be here today. Soon, he's gonna come back. But it's a very special day. We got a very special guest, main man and friend and training partner, Ollie. What up, bro?
What's up, man? How's it going? Thank you for having me, man.
Cool, bro. What do you think about the new setup?
Man, can I just take this moment to say,
yeah,
this is legit. You've come a long way from a makeshift soundproof.
Oh, by the way, Ollie was the first person to borrow us a mic, you know?
I borrowed you a mic. Because we couldn't, as your friends, we actually couldn't put up with the terrible audio.
Bro, I was listening to the sound of the first podcast.
It was so bad.
I was like, John, it's like we recorded this out of our butt cheeks and we just put it online. It's just like, what is this?
I remember we were in the gym and I think you said to James, is there any feedback you'd give? And he's like, yeah, I want to be able to hear you. Yeah. So bad. But no, man, this is really professional. Yeah. This is better than I was expecting. Well done, man.
I'm glad. Now we don't have to ask people in the gym, hey guys,
could you be quiet in the fight gym?
Just 30 seconds. And then we hear bags in the back.
Now this is the real deal.
Cool, man. So I was here in the morning. We decided Ollie's coming through.
This was a bit last minute, wasn't it?
Yeah, man. But I have a lot of questions, bro.
Firstly,
yeah,
shout out to John Jitsu. Please don't think I'm stealing your spot here.
Nah.
This is all very impromptu. And we like you said, man, we only decided to do this morning.
Yeah, man.
But you have questions.
And as our producer said a few minutes ago, Tupac said.
He said, talk about the Mercedes, not the model.
Exactly.
Make it timeless.
And John is a very timeless guy, so his spot is untakeable. Is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah, okay. So, before anything, we're supposed to talk about a philosophical topic or idea, and I think I got it. This morning, Ollie and I are there sparring and doing drilling chains.
Shooting takedowns, so it's like control the head, go for an arm drag, shoot.
Exactly.
Shoot the takedown.
And we're training, and then we're both hesitating on doing the takedown or doing it going too hard. And Jeremy was like, guys, I want to tell you guys a story. And he told us about the story of this lady that he saw on a YouTube video once. And she was a painter. She used to do oil paintings. They're kind of abstract, but kind of real. I mean, they're amazing. And he was telling us how she would do the oil paintings. Pretty much, she would go and would never start while the canvas was all the way white, simply because she'd get anxious and she'd feel, what would I draw, what would I do? So she would start by making the paint, the canvas muddy.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, she would throw just loads of random, like, browns, greens. She'd just muddy the canvas. That was the thing that Jeremy was telling us, that she would get too intimidated by a white canvas in front of her, so she would just muddy it.
Yeah, and then after she got the mud going on the canvas, she would start painting and giving shape to the mud. And slowly but surely, she would have her actual painting. And it was amazing. And we don't know how much she sold it for. But the idea translated to jiu-jitsu, and I think actually, like, I'm going to try to take this to my everyday life, was before attacking, right? We were standing, and rather than just going for whatever or committing all the way or hesitating, staying in the middle of those two by seeing what it's available for you, by
just seeing what it gives you.
Yeah.
Throw these colors on there and see what's available, see what presents itself.
Exactly. So going for a single leg, but not taking the leg, seeing what opens up, and then going for an arm drag, seeing what takes up, like not committing all the way, but going for all these things and keeping on going and then going and going. And as you keep on going and switching between those, something will open up and then take it. So that is an idea that I don't know how you could apply it for your jiu-jitsu, but I'm going to try tomorrow morning with my guard passing until I get disappointed.
Cool.
So that was, I guess, the philosophical idea of the day. Matt, tell us how you got into jiu-jitsu and tell us about your white belt story.
Wow. How long have we got? Do you want the whole story? I can try and condense it.
I don't think you have to tell us about how your parents met, your first date, which is like, yeah, like
The reason I say that is because, when I was a kid, my dad said something to me which has resonated all the way through to right now, which was
go for it.
Well, yeah, man. When I was at primary school, I always really remember one of my friends starting taekwondo.
Yeah.
And as a kid, at that age, I think I was around about like 8 or 9. You just want to copy whatever your mate's doing, right?
Yeah.
So I went home and I said to my mum, Josh has started doing taekwondo. I want to do taekwondo. And I think she thought, if we're going to ever deal with like a fighting situation, she was like, just go ask your dad. So I said, Dad, I want to start taekwondo. And he says, no, you don't. He goes,
wow.
He goes, you've got no interest being kicked and punched in the face. He goes, that's a mug's game. He says, you want to do judo because that's a beautiful sport because you can take someone down without ever having to throw a punch or a kick. And that resonated with me. And I thought that,
I'm not going to get punched in the
face. Yeah. To win a fight without ever having to throw a punch, that really resonated with me. So I did. I did judo for like 3-4 months when I was I was in primary school. And then gave it up because I was just doing too many clubs as a kid. And my mum was like, you're doing too much. You don't have downtime. Like, you're not enjoying yourself. So what do you want to give up? And I was like, oh, judo, I guess. Big mistake.
Yeah.
wish I'd longed that one out for 15 years. Yeah. But then my jiu-jitsu story, just it kind of came away around from a really, really bad negative experience of moving to London. So you know I'm in the video industry, and I was working at a production agency back home, and for ages I'd wanted to move to London.
Yeah.
I'd always thought if I don't do it, I'd always second guess it. So I made the call to move, and in hindsight, it was a really bad rushed call. The guy who ran this company, who was offering this role, basically sold me this dream. He was like, you're going to come in, you're going to set the video up, you're going to be responsible for all of our video delivery. Like, I'm going to give you all this responsibility. And I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. Looking back, there were loads of little signs that, man, it's just too good to be true, right? And now that I look at it, I definitely feel like I should have known better, but you know, how can you? But I did. I quit my job. I moved out of the flat. I just uprooted my entire life and I moved to London.
Oh, my God.
And I moved to London for this job. And 2 months later, when I basically found out it had all been a lie and he was just using me to see if video was a possibility, he had no real intention of doing video. He let me go on a week's notice.
Wow.
So I find myself in London, unemployed, no money to my name because I'd basically been relying on the salary of this job to prop me up.
Yeah.
And I hadn't taken out debts. I borrowed money and I'd put myself in a financially like, difficult position in order to make this move. And all of a sudden it just like fell apart around me. And I went for 3 months without work. And I came 2 months away from literally having to just throw it all in and literally declare bankruptcy because I couldn't pay rent. I had all these like mounting credit card debts where I was trying to stay afloat.
God.
And I'd borrowed as much money as I felt comfortable from like my family and friends and as much money as I could really.
And
I was 2 weeks away from chucking it all in, running back home, tail between my legs and feeling very
defeated,
foolish.
Yeah.
And I remember I was, and I'd moved in to 2 minutes from the gym, although I didn't know the gym at this point. And I remember I was on the phone to my girlfriend. I was sitting on my bed. I was on the phone and I was feeling really sorry for myself. Yeah. And she said, look, you're in London.
Mm.
Why don't you just go do something in London? Like there's so much free stuff to do.
Mm.
Go find like a museum or go see something you've always wanted to see or just go find some free event and try it. And for whatever reason, in the back of my head, I remember seeing London Fight Factory around the corner.
Yeah.
And I Googled it and it said free trial classes on a Monday.
Wow.
And I remember saying to her, I kind of want to just go try Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And she was like, why? And I was like, well, you know, for ages, I've always had this thing that my dad said to me. And judo seems to do it. But the thing about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is you didn't need to do it in the gi. It was MMA. And I always remember seeing like UFC and people saying the real superpower in MMA is Jiu-Jitsu and UFC. If you know good ground game Jiu-Jitsu, you can win and control a fight. And I think all of that mixed up in my head had always made me think, yeah, man, maybe I'd quite like to do it. And when I saw this trial class, I was like, I'm just going to give it a go. And she was like, yeah, I kind of just thought you'd go to like the V&A or like the Tate or like go see Big Ben, not start.
That is like Picasso in London.
Yeah, not start a hobby. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to give it a go. So I went on the on the Monday night and I did my trial class and I walked out of the gym and I remember thinking, no matter what happens, regardless of whether London doesn't work out, whether I don't find a job, if it all falls apart, I have to train jiu-jitsu. I have to make that a part of my life. A week later, I got a job.
Wow.
1 week after that, I got like a week's paycheck that was enough to feed me for the following month until I got my next paycheck.
Yeah.
I then used that to set myself up and put enough aside that the following month I could afford enough to sign up, get a membership. And then I borrowed money from my girlfriend to help me buy a gi so that I could train properly because all the instructors kept saying, yeah, you really need to get a gi if you're going to keep turning up. And I was thinking in the back of my head, like, oh, man, like, really can't afford this. Like all the things I need to be begging my girlfriend for money. Is it really a jiu-jitsu gi? But I did, man. And that was basically the start of it.
You know, it's crazy. I can totally see you. Like, that's like the only thing in your mind. Like, fuck, I need a gi.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. My priorities were straight. Like, I put measures in place to pay people back that had lent me money to keep me there.
But I mean, it's like, in a way, like, it's like, I don't get you wrong. Like, I get also why Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu became a priority straight away.
Yeah.
Because of, like, I'm pretty sure, like, it helped you with everything else.
Everything. It completely showed me another side of everything that I just hadn't even considered. You know, you're so consumed with this negative situation that I was in. And, you know, getting really like emotional and feeling all these like feelings of like shame that I was going to have to go back and admit that I'd completely failed. And then all of a sudden there was this like whole area where you could just completely focus on one thing that was not just beneficial, but was like a real, you know, amazing thing that you could learn. Like, I remember vividly the times I came afterwards when you're in the beginner's class and you're like doing your beginner stuff. And then afterwards when you see the intermediate guys and you're watching these guys and you're thinking, I can learn that. That's not unattainable. If I put the time in and I put the effort, I can achieve that. And that was the initial hook. Like, this can become something I can do. But yeah, don't get it twisted. I didn't shell all my money on a gi.
No, super random. Like what you said is also like really true. Like the thing of like, you know, like when you super beginner.
Yeah.
And you see someone
you
like
mean us.
Do a knee. Yeah. Like I mean like first week.
Yeah.
Right. And then the second, and then like you get out, and then it's intermediates come in, and you see someone do a knee slice.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that it's like, you know, it's like a. It's like, if I keep training, I could do a knee slice. You know, it's I remember one day I went to the lunch class and, man, I was so depressed because everybody was so much better.
Yeah.
And this guy taught me how to do side control.
Yeah.
And then I went to the beginner's class and I did side control.
Yeah.
And my life changed. Yeah, right? Yeah, I was like, oh my God, there is a thing called side control. What was the first experience like that for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, that's... I've never really thought of it like that. I never really focus on like the little wins. the little on the mat wins. I never walk away and think like, oh, I survived this or I did this or I pulled this off. That's kind of not ever really my mentality. I never, because that for me is like, well, you should be doing that. Like you should have a good guard. You shouldn't let them pass your De La Riva. You should be able to escape from side control. For me, I judge my how I'm progressing in terms of the bigger picture, where I stop and take stock and look back and think, the first guy that walked through the gym, you know, who I was versus 3 months later versus 6 months later versus a year later. That's kind of how I measure it.
Mm.
So for me, there's never really that little moment of like the first time I hit an armbar. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's like some experiences, particularly around competition where I do allow myself to think like that was pretty cool. But I never really focus on those little moments for me, because for me, like you and I are still so young and so new to it, and I feel like enjoy those bigger progressions because there's so many more of them to come, as opposed to like,
oh, one armbar, right?
You know what I mean?
Because actually you're right, because like you most often make smaller mistakes over time than more things that went right in one way or went the way you wanted
to. If you were to focus on it like that, like I do have this one idea in my head that I just want to hit a double leg in a competition.
Yeah.
for whatever reason, like I do have that. Like for some reason, I just want to, that's something I want to do.
So even though you're still a white belt, like very young, that is like, I think a part of like, athleticism that you're kind of an expert, and that's strength. But before getting there, so you started training jiu-jitsu, and before that, what sports were you into, Ali?
Before jiu-jitsu, man, I did no sports. All I did was hit the gym. Yeah. All I did, yeah, man. Like, look, you know that I was a bigger man before.
Were you? Were you a bigger man, Ali?
Yeah. So for those that don't know, for those that are you laughing, for those that don't know,
I think like the photo like on the podcast is gonna be like before and after.
Look, the main thing I want to say about this, man, is don't get it, like I put those photos up like, look at the weight loss I've done. Like kind of playing on that whole like transformation thing. Now let's set the record straight, like I was happy at 106 kilograms. I was like a happy man. So I was 106 kilograms, which I think is 16 stone six for any American listeners. And man, like I was just eating. I was eating non-stop. And I was just trying to lift as much heavy weight as I could possibly lift. And that's as much as I focused on. So I was training at least four times a week. And I was lifting dead squats and bench. And I was purely focused on powerlifting, getting those numbers up. And I was consuming at least four or five meals a day. Not like them little snacks you get, like those little like, gray snacks,
not
whatever it is.
Men's Health magazine, no, six meals
I'm
a day.
Talking like chicken, rice, sweet potato, like the, and I was having four to five of those a day easily. So yeah, I was definitely, but I didn't do any other sports. So it was purely about shifting as much weight as I physically could. And then it's got to the point where a big part of that is because of the people in the gym I was hanging around with. That was their focus. So I got into that, and you start to see gains, and you start to do that. And if you're into that, then you find it impressive. Then good for you. That's great. And I'm not belittling it. The point that it got to me though was, I had to ask myself, why am I doing this? I wasn't good enough. My lifts weren't good enough for me to compete. I had no real desire to compete. So all that was happening was I was just a big old boy shifting weight, but for who? And I didn't like, it got to the point where I didn't even really enjoy it. Like you can go to the gym and enjoy your time there, but if it's everything, if it's not your everything, but it is, and what I mean by that is like, if that's not what I wanted completely my life to be about, but that's what I am doing every
You're
single day,
being authentic.
Then why am I doing it? Yeah. And I think that's absolutely right. I wasn't authentic. So yeah, I just kind of, slows. Actually, some guy was like, you know, Ollie, if you lost all the weight but kept the muscle, you'd look really impressive. And I was like, damn, like, is that a compliment? Like, so I did. I cut down. I think I got down to, I think I dropped from about 106 to 90 just through diet and cardio. And then I probably started jiu-jitsu at around 90 kilograms. and I dropped down to 80 comfortably. So 10 kilograms probably fell off.
Bro, that is so preposterous. I think first time I told you, like, oh, yeah, I lost 30 kgs. And then you're like, yeah, me too. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. Like, I saw your face. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. But then, so then I was sitting at 80. But then recently I've dropped down to 73. So I've lost, 33 kilograms.
But then here's the thing that's interesting. Yes, you did lose weight, but you kept, like, solid strength training regimen.
Yeah. So everyone, everyone always enjoys asking me, like, oh, you lost all that weight, but you just lose all the strength. Yeah, of course, naturally. Yeah. Like, for a number of reasons. Number one, you get good at what you train. So if you stop training that much and you stop training at that intensity and for those purposes, then naturally you're going to reduce. But also the sheer weight that just fell off me, like, yeah, of course you are going to lose some of that strength. But you mentioned my regime. The regime hasn't gone anywhere. Definitely not. It's changed. So I now train dedicated weight sessions only twice a week. But the mentality of I need to keep this up and I need to do it is just a part of my life now. It's almost like not even something I consider. It's non-negotiable. It's I come in and I do those sessions. And you can wrap that up in whatever nice little saying you want. You know, our coach has a good one, which is you pay the price, the rent is due. Like
every day.
Every single day. And that's what I do. But I never think of it in terms of like a good old, unless I'm posting something on Instagram and then I need like a good little thing to wrap it up in. But no, like I know that that's what you have to do if you want to improve, if you want to get better. So I do it. And
that's interesting because like we've been training for 2 years now and you've been training really hard. And two things. First is I think it's interesting how people get injured in jiu-jitsu.
Where's the word? Don't talk about injuries. Cause, well, actually, I'm injured at the moment.
Yeah. Like, I mean, in a sense of, I think everyone has their weaknesses. And yours is probably like your fingers.
My fingers are a mess. Right? Yeah. I, on average, pop my fingers at least 2 to 3 times a year, easily. And it is becoming a real issue. It's put me out of this competition this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, touch wood, I am lucky I haven't picked up anything other than a sprain from a real nasty ankle lock. That took me out for 2 weeks. The fingers tend to take me out for a couple of days and then I'm back in, although I really should be lasting for longer, but no, nothing major.
Yeah, and I think like in many ways, like I remember Galinho mentioning this, but actually having like a good structure, like physical structure of muscle, stuff like it helps.
Definitely. Yeah, shout out Galinho. That boy is looking jacked at the moment. And I'm not blowing smoke at that boy's ass. Like, he's looking insane. So I've known him, for 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
Man, he's looking the best shape he's ever looked. And he attributes it to the kettlebells that he does. Just doing weights in general. But also, he does a lot of yoga. And that's something that I've never done. No, I mean, even when I was training powerlifting, I didn't do nearly as much stretching and foam rolling as I needed to do. But in terms of like a solid base, yeah, I can 100% get behind that. Just even from like supporting, you know, your lumbar, the hips, like having that base, that platform of like muscle and strength and support, definitely, I think is really important. And all credit to that guy because he's really dedicated to it and the results have paid off massively.
I have like two more questions on this topic.
Yep.
Which are, in your opinion, they take you to a freaking island somewhere and you can only take one barbell. Right? You can take as many discs as you want and maybe a bench, right? And they say you can only do 3 exercises to stay in shape, to come back, like to stay strong, stay fit, and you can take maybe one extra thing, like of your choice, but 3 exercises for strength and strength that is going to help you with your jiu-jitsu. In your opinion, in your short-lived experience, what exercises would you pick?
All right. In order of priority?
Yeah.
Number one, bicep curls.
No, no, I don't believe you.
For real?
No.
Your face.
I was like, yeah, deadlifts. Like, I was literally deadlifts or squats. In my priority, I was like, oh,
bicep curls. No, you train for a year and just come back with the biggest biceps.
Wants to see some smoke. Yeah, like, yeah. No. Okay, okay.
Honestly, it would probably, it may even not be like the big three. It may even be something like Olympic lifting, where you're doing snatches or cleans. Or to be honest, deads or squats, I think, have to be in there in some form or another. Like, pick one or the other, to be completely honest, because you have to work that lower lumbar. Like, and what I mean by that is basically where the hips are joined. So you have lower back into the legs. That's where a lot of the strength is generated from. Like, hips are so important in jiu-jitsu. You need to have that strength delivered in that mechanic. So I'd probably go as far to say, like, yeah, maybe like squats and deads that have to be in there. And if you have to pick a third, then maybe some form of like clean or clean and jerk or some clean and press or something like that, because that's the total body. If you're like, do you know what I mean? If you've reduced me down to three, then I have to work as much of the body as physically possible. And those are the big ones. I mean, deads are going to work the back as well. You never see a weak person with a big back.
Yeah.
You see a guy with a big back, you know that guy's going to be strong. Squats, just because they are so fundamentally important. And then, yeah, maybe like a clean and jerk or something.
Wow. Good, good.
Also,
I was surprised by the clean and jerk, to be honest.
I feel like quite a lot of value is being placed on my opinion. Like, take everything I'm saying as complete bro science. I haven't ever studied this at university. I haven't got any like formal accreditation. I'm like a PT or anything like that. This is literally just from my own experience of training in the gym with people that do have that. Yeah. So I have actually trained with a guy who is super knowledgeable on this stuff. Yeah. He coached the NFL Giants for a long time. Yeah. He does a lot of like dedicated powerlifting out in Australia now, and he coaches a lot of their sports teams there. So anything that I know is large part from him. But yeah, man, don't now think that like,
I'm going to stop doing everything that my coach said.
Yeah, Ollie said go clean and jerk.
You know what's funny? It's like I have no actual technical information on this. I just trained with an expert. But it's true. So, yeah, then I think like that was like really good, because I find that's actually one of your strengths, where you're actually like very strong and everything, but
thanks, man.
You don't rely on that when we're training.
No.
And
well, I try not to.
Yeah, yeah. And we're talking about something recent, right? Because like we're kind of in the same sort of like, I guess, like baby age of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You and I have been training for almost the same year.
Yeah, pretty much the same time.
Yeah.
And one thing we're talking about the other day, and this goes, I guess that goes like in parallel, right? It's so you've been competing seriously, and that's like, for me, that's been super inspiring. And I think that's not just for me,
man.
It's like, you know, and one thing is, while you're competing, it's been interesting to see how you're like studying how competition works and what it means, but also you've been keeping on track with understanding the basic principles of jiu-jitsu, like not even understanding all the techniques to take the back and everything. It's just like, okay, I got the back. What does he need to get out of here? What do I need to control him here?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot there. Yeah. All right, so first, when it comes to using strength in jiu-jitsu, that's the reason why the whole believe in biceps thing came around. Like, basically, I was doing my private sessions, and Danny and Josh basically kept saying, like, bro, you need to really stop trying to like bicep your way out of this. And I joking around was like, nah, man, like biceps the most undervalued muscle in the whole of jiu-jitsu. Like, the whole principle being like, if there was a way to muscle and strength you through a position in jiu-jitsu, trust me, I'd be there. Like, I'd be at the forefront trying to make it happen. But, and And even when like they show me a position and they're like, this is like really technical, there's a part of me thinking like, can I just just smash my way through this? But the bottom line is you can't, right? So the whole Believe in Biceps came around being like, nah, man, you have to train biceps every day. Like, because it was almost like taking, like laughing at myself for trying to do that. And then, like a little nice reminder that actually that's not going to get you to like where you need to be. Mm. What's interesting though, is then the whole Believe in Biceps became this little mantra that then Sharpe and people would say to me like, bro, believe, man, like you got to believe, like believe in the biceps. Like it almost became this whole thing where it was like, okay, now believe in your own game and trust in your own game. And to be honest, I still don't really feel like I'm there. So to come on to your next point, which I think was about understanding competition, that for me, like if you are going to compete, I think... I'd go as far as to say I think you're a fool if you don't understand the point system and the reffing and the scoring. Now, I understand, like, if you go into a competition knowing all those things, but it's, like, your first and you get, like, real, like, psyched out about it and you forget to, like, look at the points or be tallying up the points as you're going. Like, I do understand that, but you have to understand it because you're playing a game. You're entering into a game. And if you don't know the rules of the game, then you're at a serious disadvantage to that. And... like I'd even go as far as to say, like, you and I have been to and competed in a lot of competitions and you see it happen. I've spoken to people, they came off and they're like, oh, you know, I didn't know he got a sweep for that. Mm. Or like, I didn't realize that counted as a pass. Like, it's fundamental stuff that if you are going to enter into it, I think you need to know. Like, it's super important. And again, I haven't been competing long. I don't know all the rules, so I'm not pretending that like I'm a guru on them. Yeah. But I feel I know at this point enough as I'm expected to know. You know, at this point in competing. What was your next question? What was the next bit?
Like I was thinking, like, this is actually less of a question, but we were talking about this, about understanding the principles, like, because I think we're both drilling.
Yeah.
You're like, man, you know, like, I'm actually trying to do this again because I actually want to see where, like, where is my leverage coming from?
This really resonated me and a lot of people have said it to me, but recently two have said it in particular, which was Ollie, the black belt, and Sharpe, which is like, I could teach you a move and then like you could go and hit that move again and again and again. But what I've been trying to think about, and again, we're so young and we're so new to this, right? We're only white belts, but something that I really thought was interesting is that like you can get the same result from lots and lots of different ways. And what I mean by that is when we think, or at least these guys are trying to get me to think of principles, it's not to think of like this is a tripod sweep. It's to think of if they have 2 points of base and you take away one, then you have to try and push the, you know, like load up on that pillar of their one leg and you take away the other, then it's how you push them over to sweep, right? Mm. And you can do that with loads and loads of different techniques, but the principle still remains the same. And for sweeps, I find it the easiest way to visualize because you take away their points of base and then you push them to the side with no base. Like, that's, I guess, the principle, the concept. Now, when it comes to passing, it gets a lot more complicated. Yeah. And that's obviously demonstrates my shortcomings at the moment in terms of how that works. But Ollie said it to me and Sharpe showed it in action. And all of a sudden it became, oh, okay, so you take away their points of base and you push them where there is no base. And it sounds really simple. But I think for you and I, it's getting to that point where we're not getting as flustered in a fight, or you know, even just when we're drilling on the mats, like we're starting to see that. And now the execution isn't there, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not sitting here being like, I see jiu-jitsu. It's not like that at all, but it's starting to think of it in that way, which I found super interesting and something that I know you and I have been trying to work on.
And that's quite funny. Like the thing you said about, oh yeah, it's starting to see, it's like, yeah, I know how gravity works. I'm not gonna build a rocket, right? It's like,
yeah, man, and like, bro, I could chat about jiu-jitsu literally for however long this podcast goes on for, and then longer. But what I really want to communicate is, I really spend a lot of time being really aware of like my place within jiu-jitsu and my opinion because of that, like. I've been training literally just over 2 years. I'm a white belt. Like, I have to be really careful about like my opinions. And I don't ever think I do like give more than I know. But what's interesting is that you were saying that, you know, you find my approach to competitions and certain stuff inspiring. That's like great to hear, but at the same time, like, let's not get it messed up. Let's put the appropriate value on what I'm doing. I'm a 2-year white belt who's trying to compete and having mixed success, right? Like, and if it's down to work ethic, then yeah, I believe I have a good work ethic. But if it's down to like results,
not in terms of results. I think one thing that's I've seen as very important in competition, it's actually understanding what you want.
Yeah.
All right. So, and maybe I wasn't clear about that. It's like so once you understand what you want, I guess that's when it makes sense to be like, what are the rules of the game?
Yeah.
If you want to win and you want to win at levels, like, it's, for example, even I think competing at white belt, in the bigger scheme of things, you know, it doesn't mean anything. I remember, I think it was Keenan and Lucas Labry. They never won anything until black belt.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like, or Keenan is in an interesting situation where he actually never won the worlds at black belt, right?
Yeah.
But I think it was Lucas Labry. It's like, I only started winning a lot when I got to black belt. But nobody's going to look at Lepre's record and be like, how is he at purple belt?
You know, man, when I was gearing up to the Europeans, John Jitsu said something to me, God love that man. He was literally like, bro, like, I know you're getting really worked up about this. I know it's in your head. I know you're thinking about it. And I know you really want to do well. And I know you want to perform. But not even in like a year from now, in 1 month from now, is anyone going to be sitting there being like, I wonder who won the lightweight Master One white belts at Europeans in 2020? And I was like, yeah, man, like, for me, it's about trying to be the best version of me on the day.
Yeah.
And then extending that to being the best version of me when I'm training that week. And man, I don't do it. And you were saying, like, seeing what you want in competition. Like, I really, one of the biggest things I need to work on is, and Coach Louis said this to me the other day, which is trusting my game and knowing what I want to take from it. Man, if I can flip this back on you, I think you're a way better competitor than me, hands down. I feel like you turn up and you not only perform better and deliver better, but I think you're just a better opponent to these guys. And it's weird because if I was to take your approach, I don't think you would have any success with me, as people that listened last week would know. That sounds like a very stressful experience, but genuinely, hands down, I feel like maybe, I don't know, man, like, I don't have it figured out. Like, I'm far from it. Like, it still really, like, puts a lot of expectation on myself and a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. And, you know, my record shows that whilst I've done okay in some, I've done, you know, really not great in others. And I feel like your mentality and the way you have it works for you is a way better way to approach competition than I'm still figuring out.
I think it's both, because, like, you know what I was thinking about the other day, it's also like, I think it's a little bit, it's interesting, because with competition, I find, like, competition itself is a completely different skill, like, I think, than actually just doing jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah.
Like, That's why.
This is the question. This is our shortcomings again. Like, should it be any different? Like, should we not just turn up and just roll?
Yeah.
Like Danny says, you know jiu-jitsu. Like, you know how to fight. Like, it's not that you're going to turn up and they're going to present you with something that you've never seen before.
Exactly.
Like, you know what to do. But it's funny, man. Like, we sit here and we chat, and like, part of the fun of it, part of the joy of it, is that you and I are just figuring it out. But the real bit that I love and the real bit that I enjoy is that we're figuring out together.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it for me. Like, if someone competes because of something you've done or something that I've done, or if, like, they were like, yeah, man, like, I rocked up because I saw you guys were doing it, then, like, amazing. Like, that's awesome. But it shouldn't be about the expectation or the pressure. And that's where I fall down sometimes. I feel like there is an expectation on me, or there is a pressure, and oftentimes, man, no one cares. Like, like, the question is this good for you? Do you want to compete? Is this what you want to do? And if the answer is yes, then great. But otherwise, like, should be no, like, this expectation of you to go and perform and do this. It really needs to be for you. But what I love is when, like, we get, like, a little squad of us, or a little group of us, or a little team, we go and compete. And one of the best memories I have, and the one time in competition where I really have loved almost every single minute of it, was when you, me, Alex, Dom, we all went and did the Warriors Cup.
Yeah.
And that was just amazing because yeah, that was just nothing but positivity. And the Jared, sorry, I just remember Jared did it. I'm sure there's loads of other people that did it, shout out. But that was amazing because it was all of us going out supporting each other together to do something. And that's what I love in jiu-jitsu is when you see people that are bringing the other people up to do it. You know, there's so many people that I look at, especially in our morning class, where it's like they openly admit that, not necessarily from us, but from other people that have supported them and helped them, that they've you know, elevated their game or gained more confidence. And that, for me, is the incredible bit.
You know, one thing that's quite interesting about what you're saying about lifting each other up is that morning class, I don't know, like, I mean, I've been to the evening class and everything, but the morning class has become part of our daily routine.
Man, it's so special, that class.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it really is. Yeah. Like, it's, yeah.
Evening class. I still love you guys. No gi, what's up? What's up? yeah, but morning class is special.
It is, man. And when you get that, like, that unspoken bond or the bond that is spoken about when people are like, yeah, man, like, I love the morning class as well. And we come and we pull it together and it's really great. And, you know, you were there in the build up to when I was going to the Europeans when, for want of a better word, I got my dressing down from Coach and from Louise. And the thing that basically resonated with me and stuck with me the most is he said, you have everything you need in this gym to succeed. You have the mats, you have the facilities, you have the coaches around you with enough experience, you have like training partners. He said, but more importantly is you have a team around you who want you to succeed and want to support you. And he said, the only thing that's holding you back is you, because you don't believe that you should be there and you should be going. So he's like, if you want to take that mentality, don't even bother. Don't even sign up. He goes, but if you are willing to believe and these people are here to support you, invest in you, then you can do it. And that's the thing that stuck with me, was the fact that you do have everything, but you need to buy into it.
It's crazy. And, you know, also, like, I think about how, I guess, like, you remember when I said sort of inspire and stuff? It's when you are training hard, even though I'm training, I'm not going to compete, I have to catch up to the step, you know? So it's like...
It's so funny, man. You know, I read that book the other day. It's called The Boys in the Boat.
Yeah.
So there's a bit in it where the guy writing the book basically says that this one guy they're focusing on feels like the weak link in the boat. And he said it wouldn't be until years later, when they're in their 50s or their 60s, that they would all discover that they all felt like that.
Wow.
Bro, I feel like if I slip up, you're going to get the upper hand. I feel like you set the pace. Like when we roll, I feel like I can't make a mistake, because if you lock up that horrible little pressure pass and you start to, you turn it on, so you motivate me. You inspire me to keep pushing and keep going and thinking like, man, I can't. And there's so many other people like that. Like, shout out James.
Yeah.
James Milligan.
Yeah.
Shout out James, man. Like, he says something to me once, which is like, if you come 3 times a week and I come 6, by the end of the year, he's going to level up more. He goes, I'm just going to outwork you. And I remember thinking, man, like, game on.
And it's almost like this morning we did a private together with Jeremy, and we were doing stand up takedowns, and we were doing links right between arm drag and controlling the head and going to a single leg or double. And one thing that Jeremy always says is, you could pretty much do the whole stand-up like that. And it's not about forcing the fight to go your way, but it's about seeing what's there and then let just play with whatever is there. And don't force it. Just go. It's like, if it's not there, it's not there. Just whatever is there, go and take it. But the thing is, your progression, and it's like a link, like a big chain, and the more links you have, the further ahead you are than the other guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the best sparring sessions is like when I don't know your links and you don't know my links chain. Yeah. But it's like, we just keep going, it keeps flowing. Yeah. And then boom. Aha. In a sense, it's what Galing is always saying. It's, why do we do it?
Yeah.
It's because we love it. And I think that's also like, the morning class or any other class, like all those people that are there, we all there for different reasons. You know, some are there for health, some are there for, oh, I want to test myself in competition and see how far it can push me. But it's like it builds this invisible bond.
Yeah.
Where it's like no words can describe. It's not like what I said or what you said, but it's this time and this moment that we created together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is just special. And you can't find words to explain why it's special.
Yeah.
Because when you're trying to explain to your friends and you're showing videos, but you guys are just hugging each other.
That's one of the best.
Yeah.
When you're at work and someone's like, you do jiu-jitsu, what's that? And you Google it, Google Images, and the first one's just like north, south, and then...
That's quite intimate. Pretty interesting.
Man, that's so true. Yeah. I think the thing about... I just always want to try and put it in its place with me and the value of what it actually is, which is why I keep going back to like the fact we're white belts and experiences, because like we don't know it all. And we don't and we don't even know...
What we don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the answers to competition or like how to do things or do you know what I mean? We are still finding out. We're still discovering it. And that should be the joy of it. That should be part of it.
Yeah.
I'll give an example. The fact that I had to pull out of this competition sucked. Like I was like, I feel like I've let myself down. Mm. I feel like I've let the team down. Like I feel like people will think X, Y, Z. And then I was chatting to my girlfriend about it and she was like, but you're the one compete. It's you. You're the one that goes out there. So you have to make that decision. Mm. Is it the right decision? I was like, yeah, it's the right decision. She's like, well, then trust in that. What was really interesting is as soon as I did pull out, the immense amount of relief I didn't realize, the stress I let go of, I didn't realize I was holding, was phenomenal. And that's been from 3 weeks, not just 3 weeks previous, I've had two competitions before, but from months previous. And after today, I actually felt like I could just enjoy and love doing jiu-jitsu again. And don't get me wrong, I'm gonna compete again.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was really nice to experience that. And I wouldn't have experienced that if I didn't have to pull out. And that's the point I guess I'm trying to make, is that everything we're doing is part of this journey that we are still discovering. And I do think you get to a point where you can make more of an informed decision. Like you've had an ex number one world ranked blue belt come and talk on this podcast. Shout out to Patrick. You've also had Galinho, who is a
brown belt
gold medal winning European champ.
And he's a teacher.
He's a teacher. You're about. Can I tease you out? Who else you're gonna get on? The point I'm making is that there are so many more knowledgeable people than me to sit here and stand here. So all I can do is talk about like my own experience and caveat it with like, this is who I am and this is where I am on this journey.
That's pretty awesome. Bro, thank you so much. Anything you'd like to say more? Would you like to send shots to someone? Eddie Bravo.
Nah, man. Let me tell you this. One of the things I've learned is if you're going to trash talk, you best be able to back it up.
That's so true. So true. Anyways, guys, thank you so much, Ali.
Thank you,
really
man.
Appreciate
I really appreciate it.
Love John, what's up, bro?
This chair's comfy, John.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, man, I feel like I'm becoming like a... how do you say the people that knock on your door and invite you to their cause or something like that?
You mean like a Jehovah's Witness?
Yeah. Like, man, like this week, like two people heard the podcast and they're like, yeah, tried jiu-jitsu.
Really? Yeah. They tried because of this?
I don't know if it was because of this or if they're making conversation, but they did try it. Like, oh my God.
Hang on. Talk me through what happened.
No, it's just like, first of all, we didn't record a podcast for months.
Yeah.
And then my friend Shakira is like texting me like, I want to hear the podcast. I was like, bro, you don't even like jiu-jitsu, right? It's like, she's like, oh no, I just like talking about
it. She likes hearing your voice.
Just likes hearing talking about jiu-jitsu, which is like random. She doesn't want to do it. And then two friends were like, we're talking about it, sort of about the podcast. And they were like, oh yeah, I tried jiu-jitsu today.
Because of this?
I don't know if it's because of this or if like
they just tried it and then this.
You know, I tried it and then I don't know. I can't take that much credit. But I'm taking it. A win is a win. Please let us know what has your experiences been so far in jiu-jitsu? If you're white belt, blue belt, brown belt, black belt, what is something that's on your mind? Ali, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Stay safe in these streets.